All right, the Metasutta. This is what should be done by one who is skilled in goodness and who knows the path of peace. Let them be able and upright, straightforward and gentle in speech, humble and not conceited, contented and easily satisfied, unburdened with duties, and frugal in their ways, peaceful and calm and wise and skillful, not proud and demanding in nature. Let them not do the slightest thing that the wise would later reprove, wishing in gladness and in safety, may all beings be happy. Whatever living beings there may be, whether they are weak or strong, omitting none, the great or the mighty, medium, short or small, the seen and the unseen, those living near and far away, those born and to be born, may all beings be happy. Let none deceive another, or despise any being in any state. Let none through anger or ill will wish harm upon another, even as a mother protects with her life her child, her only child. So with a boundless heart should one cherish all living beings, radiating kindness over the entire world, spreading upwards to the skies and downwards to the depths, outwards and unbounded, free from hatred and ill will, whether standing or walking, seated or lying down, free from drowsiness. One should sustain this recollection. This is said to be the sublime abiding, by not holding to fixed views, the pure-hearted one, having clarity of vision, being freed from all sense desires, is not born again into this world.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Somewhere here? Okay, is there any first timers here tonight who've never meditated before and have absolutely no idea what this is about? Oh, no, see more old hands? That's a good thing. So we can pretty much jump straight into it. So one of the things is meditation. How is this sort of the normal size of the group, sort of regulars? Mm-hmm. Great. Thing about meditation, as many of you know, is it's about chilling out. It's really about having a nice bit of time with yourself. And that's very, very important in many, many ways, because we're all so busy nowadays that many of us have absolutely no idea about how to spend our time or how to improve our life as it is. And one of the things that meditation is, in many ways, like cooking, which sounds a bit strange. But, you know, when you enjoy cooking, you know, you find that you've got a recipe, and soon enough you give the recipe up. You know, the recipe just kind of doesn't really, you know, it's a skill. It's something that you get to enjoy doing. And you know, every time that you start to cook, the ingredients will always be different. So whatever you make will always be different. And that's like meditation. As such, every time you sit down, even if you sit in the same spot and do the same old things, it will always be different. But it's the enjoyment of it is being there. You know, when you're cooking and everything else, you're mixing everything around and seeing what comes out of it, whether it's sometimes it's really good, sometimes it's excellent, sometimes it's going, okay, that didn't really work, but we learned something from it. Just don't talk about that one again. But that's how it goes. So meditation's a really nice way to sort of explore your mind state a bit better. And that's quite good, because when you explore sort of how your mind works, you can kind of see how it leans towards certain tendencies which can be a bit negative and a bit harmful and everything else, and you can avoid those, and then you can kind of soften it and make it a much nicer place to be, because your mind is basically where we live, isn't it? You know, it's like our house. It's a nice place to live. You want a nice house, nice, clean, tidy, you know, a nice and comfortable place, and meditation helps us do that. Gee, it's only 5 minutes. I've got a while to go yet. I thought it was going to take longer. Okay, well, does anybody have any questions before we actually start? Yeah, go for it.
Can you tell us a little bit about your story? Your first time here, yeah?
Yeah, sure. Well, I'm local. I come from Kalamunda. Mm. So not from a long way away. I had very bad health when I was young, so I had a lot of challenges in a lot of ways, and I had a lot of obligations and other duties that I had to do, so in many ways I had to put aside what I wanted to do in life and basically be there to do things for others. And that was a very important lesson in many ways, is, you know, I enjoyed it. There's times that I really didn't enjoy it, but I did it anyway. Eventually it kind of got to the point where, you know, I was this was around 1999, 2000, and I was at Bentley TAFE, because I introduced cooking, because actually cooking is something which I really enjoyed. As a chef, as a monk, I'm not allowed to do it, unfortunately, but that's how it goes. And I was learning to be a chef and a hospitality management, and I was working with some international students there, and we did a group training session, much like this, and their training session was how to do meditation. I'm going, oh, this is pretty good. I like this. And it kind of led more into it. So it kind of eventually, you know, that was around 2000, you know, and I kind of started then. And eventually started running family business and did that for about 12 years and did a little bit of travel and this and that. But around 2012, there was this kind of moment where I sort of said, okay, I've done this sort of long enough. Let's go and do something else. You know, I did Tai Chi for a while, so I have a slight connection with Marlene through that. And that was something else which I really enjoyed, because Tai Chi is a moving meditation. So I was experimenting with lots of different styles of meditation, lots of different approaches. And eventually I sort of went to Bodhinyana, which was a bit of a drastic step, because unfortunately I applied, and then I had an email several months later going, okay, this is your date to come. It's like, panic. So I had to organize everything rapidly to you know, in very short notice, and that caused a little bit of concern about people, because people, you know, it was difficult in some ways for my family in particular, because they were so used to having me there. But then the problem was is when I went to the monastery, normally I'm sure you've seen some of the drivers come here, they wear white, they have the shaved head. I didn't have any white clothes with me. So one of the other, what's called an anagarika, that's a postulant, they're in training to be a monk, loaned me some white clothes, which happened to be an Indian dhoti trouser, these baggy Indian trousers.
Nice.
Yeah. And, you know, this baggy white shirt kind of thing. My parents just turned up one day, and Darryl was walking out of the kitchen with no shoes on, shaved head, baggy trousers. And they just went, I'm going, no. So there were difficult moments there, but it's been sort of very enjoyable. You know, being a monk is really one of the best decisions I've made. It's very satisfying, because I've done so much service in my life that I'm kind of ready to move into more sort of a solitude kind of framework. There's a lot of enjoyable things I can look back that I've done, a lot of things which I can look back and say, I've lived a good life. And that living a good life, that sort of knowing that you've done some good things, really enriches your meditation. You can really pull that in. So I get to you know, go back to my room, you know, have a great time.
Have you travelled within the Buddhist tradition? Have you travelled around much?
No. I actually managed to dodge that bullet. Well, no. Well, who knows? travel can be really inspiring in a lot of ways. It has its advantages and disadvantages, because travel is exhausting at the same time, and that's a problem. You know, you're spending all your time and you see all these things and you have great memories to go back with, and then it's kind of like, for me, the practice is wherever you are. So I don't have to go to Thailand or Sri Lanka or to Korea or Japan or anywhere to find Buddhism. It's right here. It's wherever you are. So that was always kind of a nice thing. It's your meditation practice is wherever you are. Ooh, 5 more minutes. Any other questions?
I guess so. I imagine the family have got used to that now, your folks.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I was at Gallaghan, it's not so living up to see.
Well, it does have a happy ending. My relationship with my family is actually better than it ever has been, which is kind of ironic. It was difficult at the beginning, but we wrote.
Yeah.
You know, we gave each other time, you know, because it looked like I was running off to join a cult, and they were really worried. So it gave them time to kind of come to terms with things, and they came and visited now and again, and that was good. But and I go to see them several times a year, and we're still kind of connected in that way. So it does have a happy ending, and that, ironically, my relationship with them is much better. And that's nice. You know, it's something else, because there have been cases where people who start off being a monk and their family didn't like it and they objected. And that's a really hard thing to kind of live with, is, you know that you're hurting people by being a monk or a nun or whatever, and that's a very heavy thing to practice with. So I was lucky in that regard. Yeah.
Aren't you supposed to get the approval of those nearest to you to actually become a monk?
That's if you're underage.
Oh.
Yeah, the moment you're an adult, no problem. You can run away from home as much as you like.
There are advantages
then. Oh, yeah. So, you know.
Joining the Foreign Legion, isn't it?
Can be good. So, that's close enough. Shall we make a start? Okay. Well, do some basic house. One of the most important things I always find for meditation is how you set things up. So in some ways, it's actually better to stand up and just give yourself a bit of a stretch and just to loosen up, and that way you can adjust yourself as best as you like. Stretch your legs a bit. Exactly. That's right. There we go. Some nice mood lighting. Great. The next thing is just to settle into your chair and try to find some contact with your feet to the floor so you can feel nice and stable and relaxed. Just for the next few minutes, just spend this time to settle in. You can do this with your eyes open or your eyes closed. Next, whenever you feel ready, just pay attention to your breathing. And with every breath that comes in, just relax. And every breath that comes out, release any tension. Every breath in, relax. Every breath out, release the tension. Now every time you breathe in, allow the air to fill your entire body as if it's a wave flowing through you and relaxing, just dissolving any tension. Breath in, relax. Every breath out, release the tension. Imagine the breath filling parts of your body, your chest, your arms, your legs, and with each breath, just relaxing. Every breath in, relax. Every breath out, release the tension. Just pay attention to your body again. And see if anything needs relaxing again or adjusting. settle calmer and calmer and calmer. Every breath in, relax. Every breath out, release the tension. Every breath in, relax. Every breath out, release the tension. Find your mind wandering, don't worry, it's normal. Just bring it back and relax some more. Every breath in, relax. Every breath out, release the tension. breath in, relax. Every breath out, release the tension. Every breath in, relax. Every breath out, release the tension. Every breath in, relax. Every breath out, release the tension. breath in, relax. Every breath out, release the tension. breath in, relax. Every breath out, release the tension. breath in, relax. Every breath out, release the tension. Every breath in, relax. Every breath out, release the tension. breath in, relax. Every breath out, release the tension. Every breath in, relax. Every breath out, release the tension. Now approaching the end of the meditation, just spend a few more minutes just settling. You may have wandered off onto all kinds of adventures, but now it's time to come back. And in a few minutes, I'll ring the bell. slowly open your eyes. Have a bit of a stretch. Actually, been keeping you a little longer than half an hour, so you've done pretty good. Because we started just a little early. How did you find out? Is there any comments or questions? No one? Oh boy, it must have been a really good meditation then. See, one of the things that I kind of spiked the conversation with earlier was the thing about cooking. And one of the things that you find about cooking in particular is that it's a lot about taste. You know, you test how it is. Does it need a bit more seasoning? Does it need a little bit more of this, a little bit more of that? And what's the temperature like? Is it too hot or too cold? And the adjustment in cooking is a skill. And the same with meditation too, is that a lot of the time, is there too much tension? Or is there too much relaxation? That can go the other way, because if you're too busy and you relax too much, you'll just fall asleep. Well, that's okay. So it's a bit of a balance. And it's also a balance to sort of see where your mind is going, because sometimes it's running off here, sometimes there. And that's fine too, because for a lot of us, we have a lot of business we have to look after, a lot of agendas, a lot of problems we need to sort out in life. And they're little things which we generally just bury in the background because we're just too busy to deal with them. And quite often meditation is an opportunity for these things to come up. And that can be quite helpful. Generally, you try not to do that in meditation. It's nice to sort of put that aside just for this to be quiet time. But sometimes it's also useful to allow those to come up, just to see what's on the plate at the moment, what needs to be addressed and what needs to be dealt with. So it's a bit of a journey there. Don't be afraid to ask questions. If anyone had any questions at all, any comments? Ooh, tough crowd.
It felt really intense because it was sort of so quiet and not much guiding. It just felt really intense.
Ah, yeah. It's a bit of a challenge sometimes to find out what's really good for people. And sometimes giving... I try to sort of gauge how much goes on. Because one of the skills is to settle in with the guided part, but also eventually, you know, to be able to do this on your own at home where there's no guiding at all. Mm. So it's kind of a bit, because I've done it for a while teaching prisoners, it's kind of a bit of a contrast because they don't actually like much guiding at all. So I'm afraid I've picked up some bad habits. You know, sometimes those guys, they can sit up to an hour, and that could be a challenge, and then you know, they say, it's gone in 5 minutes. I'm going, no, look, it's got my little clock here. It's been an hour. So it's different for everyone. It's actually harder to teach or to do guided meditation from a monk's point, at least in my experience, than it is to actually do it. Because when I'm doing it, you can just relax and settle in and just forget about time. But, you know, when I'm guiding, I've got to be mindful of, you know, am I keeping you too long, or, you know, how much longer do I need to pull you in for? So was it okay, or was it a bit too?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. We got one.
Too short. He's an ex-prisoner.
Uh-huh. Well, we do have another half hour. Well, you know, it's a fun thing. You know, it's part of the thing is to explore it. Meditation, if we take it too seriously, it can be a huge burden, because the problem is that we need to, in some ways, know what we're doing this for and settle in, because this is a time just to be with ourselves, to just to relax and just to give ourselves some private time. And the problem we have is, when things come up, we can try and push them away. And the problem is, the more we try and push them away, the more we try and grab hold of them or get rid of them, that just makes things worse. So it's a bit of an art to not be afraid of them, not be afraid of thoughts and feelings and what comes up. Because sometimes they're just good, sometimes it's just, you know, blah, 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 we need to do this and blah, 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 blah. And sometimes it's more sort of challenging stuff that comes up that, you know, things you've not wanted to look at, but up it comes and you have to deal with it there. And that's usually where we have all these different skills that we teach, such as kindness meditation. That was the metta sutta which we read out earlier, is sort of a leading into being able to use that in your meditation as well as in daily life. Because what happens in daily life happens in meditation as well. They work together. So the more calm and relaxed you can be in meditation, you can bring that into your daily life. And that's where it becomes really, really useful. It shouldn't just be some thing you do in temple or meditation group here and then forget about it and, you know, got that over for this week, hooray, and then worry about it next week. It's something you can use all the time. Any more questions? Aha, no more?
What's your favourite meditation?
Interesting question. I don't really have a favourite type because I generally just sit down and see what comes up. So in some ways I'm a bit more responsive than kind of planned. I kind of have done that for a long time. It's nice at the beginning to do sort of planned themed meditations. After a while it's more sort of like, what do we really need to do right now? You know, and move into that sort of style there. So, yeah, breath meditation's really good. Sometimes it's kindness meditation, sometimes compassion meditations, all different kinds.
So how long would you spend in a day meditating, or what would be an average sort of day?
It depends on the time of year. During range retreat, lots more time. And when I'm on personal retreat, a lot more time. It can be as much as 8 to 10 hours a day. Outside of the range retreat, which is now, we have a lot of work duties and other things like that. So 4 or 5 hours, maybe 5 or 6. It depends on what the day is. It can be more challenging according to the season and other things that we have to do. You know, when it's really hot, you just don't want to meditate because the huts we live in are brick and they've got a concrete roof, concrete floor, you know, it's got cork tiles, but it's a concrete floor because they're built to be fireproof. But the problem is, you know, out at Bodhinyana, when the heat wave comes, it can get up to 46 degrees. It can probably get hotter than that. It's just that most of our devices, people who have thermometers, seem to conk out at 46 degrees. So we don't really know how hot it does get. But it becomes a heat sink. And, you know, it becomes more a patience activity. So going, well, in a few days, the heat will go, and then we carry on from there. Any more?
What's your advice for discomfort during meditation?
Ah.
So physical discomfort.
Yeah. It depends on where it is. And the first thing is to be aware of where it is. And that can be very important. Because pain comes up, pain and discomfort, sometimes two different things, but can come up because of mental tension. So there's a worry going on in your background and it will obsess over a physical sensation and make it worse. Sometimes it's natural ache, such, you know, your posture's not that good. Things like that are more easy because then you can just shuffle and adjust as you need. Because one of the interesting things you'll find about our bodies physiologically speaking is we move around a lot. We seldom sit still for very long at all. So to sit still for half an hour is quite a feat. We're always moving, you know, and that's... To be able to move like that means that we don't have to notice that, you know, it's how much discomfort we're usually in. So the style of discomfort is a bit of a thing to look at. But if it's something that you have which is sometimes more mentally focused, so there's mental tension and it's tension, you know, it's making your body tense and everything else, you have to work on both to soften the mind as well as that. And there's lots of different styles that you can do that. You can focus again on the breathing, you can use an emotional context such as remembering kindness and everything else. Sometimes you can invoke sort of energy in a way to just soften things, a kind of visualization method. There's lots of different styles, but ultimately It's what works best for you. And that's what meditation, a lot of meditation is about, is what works best for you. Because what works for me is different from everybody else, and what works for you is different to everybody else. So a lot of meditation, again, like cooking, you know, things you like to eat, things other people might find, you know, we all have our different preferences and everything else. So that's the key, is to get in contact with yourself a bit more.
Is it always best to start with a kind of body scan?
Yes. That's a very, very useful method, because all of that first 5 minutes really is settling in. And in fact, when you're on retreat for monks, I mean, I remember a nun called Venerable Tenzin Palmo, who's a well-known nun in the Tibetan tradition. She's from England originally. And she once said that for the first 3 days of her retreat, she's just settling in. That's all that happens. It's just calming, relaxing, putting down the business and everything else. So to do it in half an hour is compressing it a bit, but definitely settling. So body scanning is very, very useful. And that's why at the beginning I had you all stand up to sort of loosen up a bit, because I already had you sitting for, you know, nearly half an hour to begin with. But also, if you like to do meditation a lot, it's good to do some exercises as well. Forms of stretches, things like that, because they do make you a lot looser. Generally, if you are cramped at a desk, or if you're doing, you know, on your feet all day or something else, your body's already got a lot of tension, you know, so it needs to find some way to relax to begin with. Does that help? That's a bit late, isn't it? Yeah. Oh, hey, any other questions?
With that, in particular, dealing with difficult emotions and feelings that come up, just kind of seem to derail the whole process.
Mm-hmm. That is a similar thing to the tension, because they're different for each style. Mm-hmm. Sometimes they're in difficult emotions which we have been bearing for a long time, and they will either come out in our dream time or they'll come out in our meditation, because it's looking for an opportunity to sort of say, please listen to me, this needs to be addressed. There's this emotional problem that's been cooking in the background. Cooking again. well. it's an emotional problem is a big investigation, and it's a big journey too, because a lot of our emotional problems tend to be either about us or our relationships with the people we care about, or people that we just know vaguely. It can be distant things as well. So although you don't have to tell me what the emotional problem is, it's a personal thing to really look at it, and to look at it in a very kind way, in a very patient way, because it's part of you. You know, it's not the big problem is people sort of go, oh, tension, discomfort, negative emotions, go away, don't want them. They're part of us, so we have to give them room and time as well. And that's the more you can, in a daily life, so to speak, deal with those, as well as in meditation, they don't come up so often anymore, because they are part of what makes them so powerful and so able to derail your meditation is the power they have, because they've been suppressed for so long, because either we're frightened of them or we just don't want to look at them. But when they don't have that control, so to speak, or we don't have that reaction to them anymore, it's not a huge issue, and they don't derail us so much anymore. Does that kind of help? Yeah. It's a big thing. It's a big adventure, because the more you meditate, especially when you meditate for a long time, you do become more open to sort of a broader spectrum of your personality and everything that comes out. And it's an art to be able to accept every part of you, the good parts and the bad. So that's the skill, and that's a beautiful journey. Well, I think so. But, you know, was it anything in particular that you...
Oh, no, just sometimes, you know, you just have an emotion, because you get caught up in a story about something that's happened, and then there's an emotion that's attached to it, and then, you know, you get kind of carried away with the feeling or the emotion.
Mm. They go hand in hand, the story and the emotion. So sometimes we're reacting to the story, or we're reacting to the emotion. Sometimes both.
Yeah.
And that can kind of really complicate things. So the art is to be able to just calm them down. And that can take a long time to learn, because you need a lot of patience. But the moment you can calm those things down, then you can look at them more sort of objectively in a way. Because sometimes when the negative emotion comes up, at the same time you can have a physical tension as well, because your mind is tensing and your body is tensing in response to that, and then you're tensing up in response to this, and a big cascade effect. And when that happens, your mind becomes like a pressure cooker, and it becomes impossible to deal with, because it just builds up and builds up and builds up. So the earlier that you can address that and be friend to it, and then you can resolve it much easier. Okay, any more? Okay.
I'm interested to understand how eating once a day benefits you fasting, and how that affects your meditation process and your general well-being.
Huh? Generally for meditation, the less you eat as a way is a, and that's what we're talking about, right? Is,
yeah.
Yep. I had been keeping, we have these things called eight precepts, which a lot of non-monastics keep, which where they don't eat afternoon, and they won't eat again until the next day. I found that really good before I was a monk. So when I came to the monastery, it wasn't a huge shock for me. Some people, it's very hard to adjust, because dinner's really nice, you know. It's a time we put aside for the day when we have our big meal and get together, and or just chill out in front of the TV. And, you know, it's a big thing. I found food acts sort of like, on times when I did eat at night, the next morning I felt kind of hungover, kind of thick-headed. So eating less made it much more clear-headed, which was really, really useful, because then that energy, because to digest food takes a lot of energy, and it feels there, and it's heavy, and it's bloated, and so on, and it just sits there. Whereas eating less did help a lot. But it's not something everyone can do. You know, it sort of... generally when I'm on retreat, I would eat a lot less, because it becomes a bit of a distraction. You know, you just have this bloaty feeling, and especially if you eat a very heavy meal, then naturally all you're going to want to do is sleep. Especially if it's a lot of carbohydrates and sugars. They're really good at putting you to sleep. So does that kind of help?
Yeah.
Well, we got a little bit more.
Through your range retreat, you said you meditated a lot. Did you do anything else, like study sutras, or
Yep. Not only sitting meditation, but walking meditation, and Tai Chi, because it's very, very important to keep exercise, especially when doing range retreat. It was very unfortunate we had some burn-off happening on a property next door, so for a good week and a half, or actually it was a bit more than that, it was thick smoke, so you couldn't really go outside and do stuff. But study is very, very useful, because it kind of, it's in some ways it's like a point of reference, but also you can get some inspiration from it. You can just get one nice verse or one nice text, and you're going, oh, this is really interesting, this gives a new perspective. So it's worth doing. Yeah. You have a question?
No.
Okay. But apart from that, not a lot. It's just basic housekeeping, you know. Occasional washing and cleaning the hut and everything else, but not a lot. We put that side of time just for meditation. Because the rest of the year we're pretty busy.
Yeah.
Okay, any more? Come on! Oh, yep.
Favorite sutta?
Oh boy. I don't know if I've really got a favorite one. There's just so many. I mean, one of the ones I was working on recently was Majjhima Nikaya number 75, the Magandhya Sutta, which has a really punchy line in it, actually. It's a... how does it go? The theme of it is that there was an ascetic, so to speak, who was a bit obsessed with health, and he had been taught this verse that nirvana, which is the goal of Buddhism, and indeed many of the traditions at the time were looking for that as well, was the highest health, and he wasn't quite sure what that meant. So there's a really punchy verse in it where the Buddha sort of talks about, you know, it is possible that you can see that as long as you let go of these things that we're holding on to, because what we're holding on to can make our health dissipate in a way. The punchy line is a bit kind of heavy, actually, so I'm not really sure if I should quote. Are we allowed to quote these things, or?
No.
It goes, for a long time, wait a minute, how's it go? And then if you let go of these things you hold on to, you may realize, for a long time, I have been tricked and deceived and cheated by this mind, this ego. And that, you know, because I have just been holding on to this body and this mind and nothing more, and I've been making things worse, and that's been causing the whole problem. You know, we've been holding on to things which, you know, come and go, and are very, very sort of important, but if we hold on to them too much, they just make things worse. So letting go is a big, big skill. It's a lot harder than it sounds. It's really, really good.
That's a real quandary though, isn't it? You know, like you get to a certain age in life and you realise you've got all this stuff and think, well, there's just so much stuff.
Yeah.
60 years to get all this rubbish that I've got now.
Yeah.
I've got 20 years to try and get rid of it.
Yeah.
And if I'd listened to you, Blake, it wouldn't really matter, you know. You wouldn't know any better.
Well, you see, this is the irony, isn't it? You know, when we start off young, we're told, you know, you need to do this, you need to do this, and we're building up a personality all the time. And that's really useful. And then you get to a certain age, it's like, what was I doing that for?
Yeah.
You know, it becomes more of a burden than something useful.
Like the old saying, he who has the most toys wins.
Ah, uh-huh. Yeah.
I mean, that's,
but he who has the most toys has the most cleaning to do. I'm sorry. No, I didn't hear what you said, I'm sorry. He who has the most toys wins. You said something after that, I'm sorry?
Greed is good.
Oh, greed is good. Oh, yeah. Very 1980s. Well, I think that's where it came up. Okay. At the beginning, yes. I loved cooking and gardening. They were my two big hobbies, and I got a lot of enjoyment out of it. And the thing is that being a monk, you have to, or a nun, you have to give up a lot of the things that you get ordinary enjoyment out of. Cooking, gardening, shopping, entertainment, movies, stuff like that, game over. So you have to find your happiness from somewhere else, and that's meditation, as well as how you live and the things that you do. So the service that you do, you know, I help other monks, and you know, we have chit chat and we talk about meditation, stuff like that, and we help each other, and that makes life so much richer and so much more enjoyable. So I don't lose out, you can say. Yeah. But that was kind of the that's one of the big challenges for monastics, because we're so used to getting our happiness from the internet, doing things, yep, our hobbies and everything else, and you can fall into the trap of being a bit of a project fiend, you know, you're just looking for stuff to do so you don't have to miss out.
Mm-hmm.
But the point basically is that the Buddha does restrict a lot of the ways that we can sort of find happiness, so we have to find happiness inside.
Oh, that must be very difficult, isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
Retrieve our souls from whatever we are thinking.
Because when you think about it now, most people, and this is one of the interesting experiences I had when I sort of occasionally leave the monastery and visit people and things like that, is you can see that we get a lot of our happiness from the internet, from watching TV, from shopping, from work, from doing this. We are so busy, we are constantly distracted, including housework and things that we consider tedious chores. So to actually stop, it's a real culture change. Wait for it. Ah, okay. So that's one of the things, that's what makes it challenging, so it's not boring. You know, a lot of people think, oh gee, you know, it's going off into sitting in the forest, isn't that boring, don't you get bored? Not at all, because you're constantly challenged. you're always thinking of all these things you could be doing, all these things that, oh, you know, if I just did this and everything, you know, you can see these little ways that these old habit patterns try to pull you back in, and that's okay, you know, they're not the enemy, so to speak, but you're going, well, I don't have to do that anymore. And that's very empowering, because the thing that you find, ironically, is that because we're looking for happiness outside, it's actually very disempowering, because we're relying on all this external stuff, which we accumulate and so on, and build up the most toys, and you find out that it doesn't actually make you happy. It might for a little while, but not for very long. Anyone else?
True, and the craving too, because we are not going again and again.
Mm-hmm.
Our mind makes us numb. Oh yeah, I'm craving for that, and more stress comes in.
Yeah, and that's the big, that's the model that we look at, because it's that craving, you know, because it knows habitually, like in the past, oh, I used to get happiness doing this. I used to get happiness watching movies or doing this or doing this. So we're pulled towards it because we know that we could get some gratification out of it. So, you know, part of our mind is an addict. It's a junkie for happiness. It's a junkie for getting, you know, satisfaction and everything else. And when we look at that, going, okay, that's a big one that we have to go against, because it's really ingrained. It's something we've been doing for a very, very long time. And a lot of people generally will sort of say, yeah, but what's wrong with doing these things? What's wrong with going on the internet or drinking or all these things that we're supposed to give up? Which generally tells me where they're getting their happiness from, because they're defending it. But at the same time, it's kind of like, well, there's nothing really wrong with it per se. It's just that the happiness in meditation is much, much more fulfilling. And not having to rely on those external things, because, you know, we think that the internet will never fail, but what happens when it does? You know, you can rely on something inside, which is much more fulfilling. Got 3 more minutes. Anybody else?
Creativity, then. Let's look at creativity. Didn't want possessions. Mm-hmm. What about creativity? You know, big artist or musician or poets and stuff like that. All that very rich stuff.
Mm.
If you was to take the monastic route, you'd get away from that as well, wouldn't you?
To an extent. I mean, a lot of monastics in different traditions, not so much sort of this tradition, have written poetry, have done artworks, are well known for it, have produced some beautiful things. But, you know, it's a bit of a trade-off, is that when that meditation starts to really be something you look forward to, you know, getting back to my heart, and, you know, when you get to that point, it's kind of like, yeah, creativity is nice, but it's kind of, you know, you have something more enjoyable. But if you can use it, go for it. That's the thing. In your meditation, being creative is very, very good, because creativity can be used in problem solving. So it can be skill building. You can be creative in how you deal with negative emotions or problem, you know, things that you have to deal with, or tension and other things. You can imagine different ways or build different skills in dealing with those things. So it can be very useful. Okay, 8:29. So.
Thank you all, and thank you, Venerable. Thank you.